Hello, everybody. Glad to see you here. Welcome to our fifth Great Quest webinar. This one is on the etheric body, and I am B.L. Allison. I'm trading off with Leone. She taught a couple of them, the last few ones on the rays. She'll be doing the one next month on astrology, esoteric astrology, and then I'll get into the ones on the labors of Hercules later this summer. I think most of you have been with us for a while, so I'll just quickly go through these slides. You all are muted right now to keep, you know, to minimize the noise. Just raise your hand. There's your little hand right there. Just raise your hand if you have a question or a comment. Or you can type a message in the questions block for the staff. Okay, let me switch over to my other computer here and pretend to be Michael. And start the presentation. Okay, got a lot of information here. So if I go too fast, please forgive me. Like I said, you can raise your hand or you can type a question. All right, we've seen this before, but I wanted to do a quick little review. As you studied in the very first lesson, we all emerge from that one universal life. It's the essence of who we are, that spark of life that's known as our monad, and it flows outward through the universal being, via lesser beings like the constellation, to our planet, and eventually to the person that we become. Our own solar system is similar to a cosmic system. The seven planes of our solar system are the body of our solar logos, and we are all part of his body. His consciousness is at the highest level of that logoic consciousness. Our goal is to eventually achieve conscious union with that essential spirit, our monad. Let's define a few terms before we get too much further into this. Prana, it's absolute energy, and that's what we're going to talk about today, our various energy systems. As you've hopefully seen in this month's study material, there is nothing in the manifested universe that does not possess an energy body. They are subtle and intangible, sometimes referred to as light bodies. But in our case, it's substantial enough to control and condition our outer physical body. This is our etheric body, and it's part of a greater body known as the etheric web, which is the field of space, and as such, is a constant stream of circulating energies and forces. Ether was considered by ancient scholars to be the fifth element, the first four elements being fire, air, water, and earth. It was known even back then to be the substance the universe was made of, and as such, the substance in which light traveled, that is, the light of a sun or of a distant star. Back then, it was seen as being beyond the characteristics of the elements that were known on earth, and it personified the skies and the heavens. We now know it circulates throughout the universe and conditions the activities and qualities of every form found within that universe. As the quote from esoteric astrology tells us, just as the forces of the planet and of the inner spiritual man pour through the etheric body of the individual man upon the physical plane and condition his outer expression, activities, and qualities, so do the varying forces of the universe pour through every part of the etheric body of that entity that we call space, and they condition and determine the outer expression, the activities and qualities of every form found within the cosmic periphery. Let's Let's look at those seven cosmic planes that we studied in our very first webinar. The diagram on the left shows the seven cosmic planes. The bottom seven planes are our solar system, right down here, or right here. So this is an expanded version of the solar system here on the right, and you'll see that the physical plane down here is again divided into seven subplanes. And they show a similar pattern to what we see on the left, only this time it's man's physical etheric down here, or down here. So here we've got the little man, we've got the solar logos, or the cosmic man, and we have the actual universe in a greater scale here. Remember this slide from our first webinar. Here's the vehicles of the soul. Here's the lower vehicles down here. And here's the integrated personality that is all of these working together. So, as we learned before, our physical body is what we act with, and it's also how we sense our environment. So the senses are part of our etheric body. So exactly what does that mean to us? Let's compare the constitution of man. This is chart 8 from Treatise of Cosmic Fire that we looked at in webinar 1. The planes of the cosmic physical, in other words, our solar system, over here, or down here, well, this whole thing, actually. Let me see. They're different levels of cosmic ether. See, you have the fourth ether, the third ether, the second ether, and the first ether. Here in the physical plane, you have the fourth cosmic ether here on the Buddhic plane, the third cosmic ether on the Atmic plane, the second cosmic ether on the Monadic plane, and the first cosmic ether on the Divine plane. You can see that also in this diagram. Shows the same thing, just shows it in a little different way. So, as with our consciousness, the higher that we are consciously aware of, the closer to spirit we become, and that same principle follows with the etheric planes. The higher up they go, the more rarefied the matter, ether, that they are made of. So, the substance of the first cosmic ether, way up here, is going to be much more capable of creating and sustaining a universe than the ethers of the physical etheric plane way down here where we're working from, right? In Light of the Soul, it talks to us about these ethers from the cosmic physical plane. We've got the divine planes, the top three here. Plane one, the logoic, which relates to the will aspect, and it relates, or it is, the sea of fire. That's what that ether is called. We've got the monadic plane, which relates to the second aspect, love, wisdom, and that is called the acacia. We have the atmic plane, which relates to the third aspect, active intelligence, and that is referred to as ether. Now, whoops, sorry about that. Let me clarify a little here. The most rarefied of the ethers is, as I said, considered the sea of fire. That is the God, the Father aspect. The next version is the acacia, which is a Sanskrit word that means to shine or to radiate. And it relates to God, the Son aspect, the second aspect, the monadic plane. And the next plane down is the atomic plane with ether. That's a little less rarefied, but it's very similar to the Akasha, and it's considered an aspect of God, the Holy Ghost. Then we have the plane in the middle, the plane of union or at-one-ment relating to air. Remember, air is an element that's associated with relationships, and we see that here. This is an intermediary plane between the three divine planes, these ones up here, and the three planes of human endeavor, these ones down here, where we work. So then we have the mental plane, which is human will. The element is fire, and that is a reflection of the sea of fire. Then we have the emotional plane. Human emotions, love, and desire. The element is astral light, and it's a reflection of the Akasha. And then we have physical plane, human activity, and that's the lower ethers, a reflection of the higher ethers. So see, there's correspondences for all of these. Consciousness is going to manifest on all planes, but it's going to do it a little differently on these. And we can see that working out, I think, best through our senses. We can trace their progress from the physical to the astral and the mental, and eventually what we're going to find when we reach the buddhic or atmic planes. So here's another little list of them. The fire, the logoic, is the breath. That was the breath that was breathed out that created the universe. Akasha relates to sound, and the sense we know of is hearing. Ether, it's vibratory response, and it relates to touch. Air, vision and sight. Fire, discrimination and taste. Astralite, desire, emotions, smell. And then on the physical, it's the organs that relate to all of these. The ear, the skin, the eyes, the tongue, the nose. Let's face it, without our vehicles, we can't really relate to the world around us, can we? So, we incarnated for a specific purpose to experience life and work on refining our personality, and we hope to gain a measure of soul contact in that process. Our senses are what provide the contact at any level. The physical plane is the plane of active experience in and through matter. This plane is associated with early humanity from the Lemurian era, hundreds of thousands of years ago, where the appropriation and coordination of the physical body and its subplanes, including the development of the five senses, was the evolutionary goal. A correlation would be to consider this an infant stage of human consciousness where the person is physical in his reactions. For humanity today, the physical functions developed by the Lemurians are now automatic faculties inherent within humanity. The five higher subplanes of the physical plane are made of five grades of physical substance that have certain vibratory qualities, and as a result, hearing was the first sense developed, and it allows a person to first discover his own note, then that of his brother, and later the note of his group. It is a vibratory response to sound. Touch was the second sense developed, allowing a person to grasp varying degrees of quantity regarding himself, other people, and groups he comes in contact with. Sight helps man realize an idea of proportion that allows him to adjust his movements to those of others. Taste gives him an idea of value so he can decide which things are best for him. leading to finer and finer distinctions and discriminations. And smell, the last sense to be developed, gives him an innate quality and keen perception that eventually leads him back to his inner quality, the soul. I'm not so sure I'm in the right spot. Yeah, I am. Sorry. Okay. So, back to this constitution of man slide, we can see the subplanes and the senses that I was just talking about. See, they're right down here. Hearing in the gaseous stage is still in the physical, but all the rest of them are up here in the ethers. See? They're in the etheric body. So hearing his own note, his brother's note, and the note of his group, as I said, becomes clairaudience when we move it up to the astral plane, those more subtle messages that we hear. We learn to listen on a deeper level, registering our inner feelings. Then higher clairaudience when we move up to the mental correspondence. And this creates specific understanding of the details, the patterns, and the shapes. It begins to form an understanding of how the sound was created and how it can be used. Touch enables us to establish value in relation to others. On the physical level, this touch reveals size and texture. On the astral plane, touch registers the inherent quality of things or people we come in contact with. This is known as psychometry, the ability to discover facts about a thing or a person by touching them. On the mental plane, touch registers as planetary psychometry, the ability to sense the quality and condition of the whole planet and the various groups which exist within it. Sight on the physical plane gives a sense of proportion, and it enables us to adjust our movements to those of others. It manifests as clairvoyance on the astral plane through the use of the solar plexus, allowing the first vision of inner worlds. Later, as a disciple, we learn to use higher clairvoyance as a function of the mind on the mental plane. It reveals truth through thought forms, usually symbols, which bring light, information, and inspiration. So see how those are all working out? Touch, psychometry, planetary psychometry. Sight, clairvoyance, higher clairvoyance. Taste is basic to making choices of acceptance or rejection. We like it or we don't. On the physical plane, taste helps us decide what we want to eat to nourish our bodies. On the astral plane, taste is experienced as imagination, leading us to search for new, exciting flavors. On the mental plane, taste replaces emotion and discrimination is developed that destroys illusion. We see through to the real. Taste helps us to decide what we take into our thoughts, what we think, how we judge what is good or bad for us, and this discrimination ultimately allows us to distinguish between the self and the not-self, between right and wrong. Smell was the last sense to be developed on the physical plane, and it stimulates a desire to move closer to a scent that attracts us or to withdraw from a disagreeable smell. As we expand our consciousness on the astral plane, smell becomes a sense of emotional idealism that is based on an intuitive reaction. And on the mental plane, this brings spiritual discernment, which allows us to respond to group vibration. So, given all of these correlations, let's look a little closer at the astral plane, the place where a person gains consciousness through his senses. Right here. He does this through sensitivity, awareness of moods, emotions and feelings, even desires and aspirations that all have their roots within the principle of self-consciousness. We can correlate this stage in human evolution to that of an adolescent. One of the most vital things that every aspirant has to do is learn to understand the astral plane, to comprehend its nature, and to learn both to stand free from it and then to work on it, as a treatise on white magic tells us. Then we begin to relate more and more to the mental plane, where we develop the right use of the intellect with the lower mind and the abstract thinking with the higher mind. So we're doing both of them. And so we have three basic stages involved in developing the mind. First, where the mind is the receiver of impressions from the outer world via the five senses and the brain. This sensory reception provides the individual with knowledge to evaluate his place in the outer world. Next is the stage where the mind initiates its own activities and the intellect becomes a dominating factor. The reasoning mind acts upon the information gained, and it forms its own streams of thought to add to the perceptions that it has gathered. And the third stage, where the soul, through concentration and meditation, succeeds in imposing ideas and impressions upon the mind that is held steady in the light, enabling the mental body to respond to soul impression. This plane is associated with modern humanity, where developing the mental body and its subplanes is the current evolutionary goal. The correlation would be considered the adult stage of human consciousness. So, just as we begin to wrap our minds around all of these divisions, I want to read this great quote from Esoteric Psychology, Volume 2. The value of the above information consists in the fact that it gives, symbolically, a synthetic picture of man's unfoldment in higher relations. Its danger consists in the capacity of the human intellect to separate and divide, so that the process is regarded as proceeding in successive stages, whereas in reality there is often a paralleling activity going on and much overlapping, fusing, and interacting of aspects of rays and of processes within the time cycle. Isn't that a great quote? As we also learn in a quote from Esoteric Psychology, Volume 2, from the angle of the initiates of the ageless wisdom, the story of man, the aspirant, is the story of his response to or repulse of applied energies. The fact that the interplay between different types of energies results in the formation of those aggregations or condensations of force, which we call bodies, material or immaterial, is incidental to the main issue, which is the development of a conscious response to the life of God. Small units of energy, relatively speaking, are swept into contact with great fields of force, which we call planes. According to the extent of the impact, so will be the response between the unit of energy and the field contacted, and so will be the quality and vibratory activity of the atoms of matter which are attracted and held together. They will thus constitute a temporary form from which can be seen as externalized and as relatively tangible, and which can function as a mode or medium whereby the soul can contact larger forms of divine life and expression. The more intricate the organization of the form and the more complex and perfect the response apparatus, the more clearly will be indicated the age of the soul and the perfected intent or potency of its will, and the freer it will be from the limiting karma of an unevolved conditioning vehicle. There's a lot there in that little paragraph that I've split out into bullets for you here. But this is actually what you've been working on in your homework the past few months on the seven rays, detecting the interplay of energies within well-known people and trying to ascertain where they stand on the path. As we've been talking about, the dense physical body responds to impulse from the outer environment as well as the inner soul impulses. The etheric body, on the other hand, is separate. It's slightly behind and above the physical body, and it's a much more subtle vehicle. It contains the chakras, the nervous system, and vitalizes the physical counterpart. The vital or etheric body, as DK tells us, is the major energizing factor and is an exact replica or counterpart of the outer form, being the true intermediary between the inner worlds and the outer man. The nadis, the lines or threads of force, underlie every nerve in the human body and in the centers which they form at certain points of intersection, and they are the background or motivating agency of every ganglion or plexus that is found in the human body. So here he's telling us what the chakras are. They're major crossroads of these nadis that run throughout our body, creating these hubs of potent activity. These inner energies make contact through energy streams of the centers in our etheric body, and they do that through our major glands. So the pineal gland is related to the head center, the crown. The pituitary is related to the ajna. The thyroid is related to the throat center. The thymus gland is related to the heart center. The pancreas to the solar plexus. The adrenals to the base of the spine, and the gonads to the sacral. As DK tells us, these centers are closely concerned with the endocrine system, which they determine and condition according to the quality and source of the energy which flows through them. Then he tells us, he's not going to go into it now because he's already dealt with the subject in other books, and he's primarily talking about esoteric healing, but in esoteric psychology, he wants to point to our attention that the relation between the centers of force in the etheric body and the processes of integration, which bring one center after another into activity, and the eventual control of the soul after the final at-one-ment of the entire personality. So they all work together in an ordered process to make us the personality that we are. Oops, I think I missed one there. So now that we understand the etheric body a little better, let's look at it again in relation to the constitution of man. And, oh, by the way, are you guys getting the idea that this is one of my absolute most favorite charts since I keep bringing it up? Well, it is. This time, we're going to add in the chakras, or those centers of energy that are found on each plane, beginning with the etheric. As DK tells us in esoteric astrology, within the human etheric body, there are to be found seven major force centers, which are in the nature of distributing agencies and electrical batteries, providing dynamic force and qualitative energy to the man. They produce definite effects upon his outer physical manifestation. Through their constant activity, his quality appears, his ray tendencies begin to emerge, and his point in evolution is clearly indicated. But before we get too far into this, let me insert a little note of caution here. There are different ways to view the chakras, and they have different correlations on the different planes. Consider the physical plane, where we have a splenic center. See, we've got that indicated right here, a splenic center, and we have only one head center, not the ajna and the crown, both specified here. Because what? On the physical plane, the crown isn't effective. It's effective up here in the mental plane, right? So what we're seeing here is that, and I'm not going to get in too much into it, but we show a relationship between the splenic center on all three levels here to the permanent atom for that level. So the physical splenic center relates to the physical permanent atom. The astral splenic center relates to the astral permanent atom. And the mental splenic center relates to the mental unit right here. Okay, so that's what we see there. We can also see that from both of these diagrams that the four lower chakras are on the lowest level of the etheric. They're on the fourth ether right here. Okay. Then one subplane up is where the throat center is, right here. Right here. One more up is where the heart center is. And on the highest level is where the head center is. Okay? And we see that same pattern repeated all the way up. So, the word chakra literally translates as a wheel or a disc, and we learned a little earlier that they are force centers formed where the lines of energy in the etheric web cross. The three basic functions of the chakras, they vitalize the physical body, they develop consciousness, and eventually the centers transmit spiritual energy. Reference the self-consciousness. This may be relatively undeveloped state of consciousness of the savage, the consciousness of the average man, or the highly developed consciousness of the initiate up to the third degree. Whatever the case, it's always concerned with consciousness. Only the point at the center is concerned with the first aspect or the life aspect. The petals of the chakras themselves are concerned with the second aspect, consciousness. The state of the consciousness is indicated by the size, the color, and the activity of the energies which compose the petals. Their unfoldment and development is conditioned by the governing rays, as well as by the age and the length of the soul's expression. Eventually, the centers do transmit spiritual energy. The point at the center of the egoic lotus, what we call the jewel in the lotus, is the point that's used by the monad to anchor itself upon the physical plane. It contains within itself all the possibilities, all potentialities, all experiences, and vibratory activities. It eventually leads to the return of the so-called eternal pilgrim to the Father's home after many eons of experience. To quote a great passage from Telepathy in the Etheric Vehicle. So energies flow from the physical world, feeding and controlling the animal appetites, from the astral world, determining the desires, emotions, and aspirations, from the lower mental plane, the lower mind, developing self-will, selfishness, and separativeness, and the direction of the life upon the physical plane. Energies also flow from the soul. So we're just a bundle of energies. As we just talked about the petals of the chakras, let's look a little closer at that, okay? The base center has four petals. The individuals focused in the base center are intent upon survival in nature, as this center is related to the physical plane and gives grounding. It is awakened in its true and final sense at the third initiation by an act of will directed from the head. The sacral has six petals. It's still predominantly animal nature. The majority of impacting impressions are going to be reached through the sacral center. These individuals are possessed by a sexual nature. At the first initiation, the sacral energies begin to be raised to the throat center, and eventually the creative output of the aspirant will work primarily through this higher point. The solar plexus center has 10 petals. Ordinary people of humanity are focused here right now. In the average person, it works closely with the sacral and base centers, with desires focused on the lower appetites. In more advanced man, It gives desire for recognition and for better quality of life. And in the person who's approaching the second initiation, it acts as a clearing ground for the energies of the lower centers, which begin to be gathered up by the solar plexus and transferred to the heart center. The throat has 16 petals. All advancing humanity are focused in this center. Purification of the physical appetites results in the transference upwards of energy from the sacral to the throat, and individuals focused in the higher center become mentally creative. This center provides the entry point for energy from the mental plane. The throat center of the spiritual aspirant of disciples and initiates below the third initiation is responding primarily to the seventh ray influence. The heart center has 12 petals. The center becomes active after the first initiation, which relates man to the Buddhic plane of intuition and the second divine aspect of love, wisdom. The heart center is the center of universal love. The solar plexus is the seat of personal human love. As we evolve and the heart center begins to awaken under soul impulse, it draws up the energies of the solar plexus, thereby controlling the desire nature. This is a slow process and it doesn't fully open until the fourth initiation. The ajna gives the appearance of having two petals, and it's actually more like two lobes because it has 96 petals. Aspirants and disciples are becoming focused in this center. It is dominant after the second initiation and is fully functional by the third initiation. It is the seat of personality power, and it represents the highest form of creative intelligence in man. It also is the organ of imagination. The crown is said to have 960 petals. Occultists, initiates, and masters are focused in the crown. It is dominant after the third initiation and relates man to the atmic plane and the first aspect of will and power. It provides the soul its point of entry and exit in the body. We hear about transferring energy from the centers below the diaphragm to those above it, so I'd like to help you understand that phrase a little bit better. Simply put, the diaphragm is a dome-shaped muscle. That's my idea of a muscle. That separates the thoracic cavity, lungs and heart region, from the various organs that are found in the abdominal cavity, stomach, liver, spleen, pancreas, adrenals, all that stuff. Okay? The centers below the diaphragm relate to the personality-based man, while the centers above the diaphragm relate to the emerging soul. And we see that if we look specifically at the chakras. The crown center represents spiritual consciousness, the ajna, mental consciousness, the throat, creative consciousness, and the heart, feeling consciousness. The personality is expressed through the lower centers. The sacral, which is the mental element that transfers eventually to the throat, the solar plexus, which is the astral element that eventually transfers to the heart, and the base of the spine, which is the physical element that eventually transfers to the head center. This is a fairly ordered process that proceeds naturally as the person steps on the path and begins to take himself in hand, purifying the lower vehicles, building the antakarana, and working selflessly to aid his soul group. Trying to artificially raise the chakras when the body isn't prepared can cause all kinds of trouble, but we're going to see a little more about that in a moment. So, as we just saw, first the centers below the diaphragm are controlling and dominant factor. This is a stage of dense materiality, of lower desire and physical urge in its full expression. It was representative of Lemurian times when the sacral center controlled. Then, after a long, long period, eventually other centers below the diaphragm became fully active, with the major emphasis shifting to the solar plexus, which eventually becomes the great clearinghouse for all of those lower forces and marks the period where it is possible to begin to shift into a higher body, the astral body. This was characteristic of Atlantean development. The next crisis is the awakening of the throat center and the shift of the lower energy into the higher activity. The ajna also begins to become active, producing that integrative and creative personalities. This is characteristic of the present Orion development, the fifth root race. So while we know of many people today with quite negative personalities, the fact that they have an integrated and powerful personality tells us what stage they're working at, and the nature and scope of their work tells us how much further on this particular stage they have to go. As I mentioned earlier, being able to recognize these stages in yourself and in others is part of the homework that you have been doing this year and will continue to do for the rest of the year. The awakening of the heart center and the shift of the solar plexus energy into the heart produces group activity. This is awakening in disciples today, but it's not yet in humanity as a whole, and it marks the beginning of a new sense of spiritual energy for the disciple. It will progress more for humanity as a whole in the next great race to come, the sixth root race. And finally, many thousands of years in our future, humanity as a whole will experience the crisis that awakens the head center, with the consequent arousing of the Kundalini fire at the base of the spine that leads to that final integration of soul and body, and the appearance of perfected humanity upon earth. This will express the nature of that final seventh root race. All this talk about transference, let's look at that a little bit closer. The first transference, the sacral to the throat, associated with the first initiation. Aspirants transfer force from the sacral to the throat chakra, increasing activity of some kind that is creative in other ways besides just pursuit of sex or money. This particular period is going to last several lifetimes. It's not one of those, oh, this year I'm doing it and done. The center below the diaphragm during this stage are fully awakened, they're active, and they're vivid. This creates a magnetic field moving the whole area and making it potent enough to extend its influence above the diaphragm. The solar plexus dominates, receiving and absorbing energy from the sacral and deflecting it upward as sacral forces are carried to the throat and solar plexus forces are carried to the heart, although the transference to the heart is almost negligible at this point, DK tells us. The person is now highly intelligent, conscious of the dualism of his nature, and he's ready to tread the path of probation. Discipline becomes his keynote, and he works on purifying his lower appetites. This is a long and difficult period. The aspirant becomes a mystic as the heart and throat centers become increasingly more active. He is intelligently creative and slowly becoming group conscious. However, his reactions are still selfishly motivated at this point, yet he has visions and periods of spiritual efforts, and the mystical life is gaining momentum. Pluto and Vulcan rule the first initiation. The influence of Vulcan reaches to the very depths of his nature, while Pluto drags to the surface and destroys all that hinders in these lower regions. The second transference, solar plexus to the heart, related to the second initiation. The dominant personality is control of the lower forces until the disciple begins to respond to higher energies and transfers the forces that have been raised to the heart and throat into the ajna, marking an integration of the personality. This integrated personality can still be materialistic, as personality ambitions dominate at first, but that's a temporary expression of this coordinated personality. This is an intelligent, creative, powerful person who is learning to use all of his faculties. Then the soul begins to stimulate the ajna. The ajna is vivid and potent, the throat is intensely active, and the heart center is rapidly awakening to its full potential. This second initiation is learning to control the astral desire nature. Neptune, Venus, and Jupiter all rule this initiation. Jupiter develops the heart center and more inclusive attitudes. Venus governs the ajna and develops the ability to love intelligently. When Neptune is active in the advanced person, then emotion desire has been transmuted into love aspiration and is dedicated to and oriented towards the soul. Then the entire emotional or sensitive nature is responsive to energies coming from the heart of the sun, in other words, the soul. And when this is the case, it indicates that the disciple is now ready for the second initiation. In preparation for the third initiation, focus is going to shift to control of the mind and then the entire personality. But the period between the second and third initiation is said to be one of intense suffering, which is the residual penalty of glamour and illusion. We're told that light pours in only occasionally from the soul during this time. That third transference, the base to the crown, happens at the third initiation. A period of soul control where the crown becomes radiantly active because of the uprising in a fresh and more potent manner of the mystical instinct combined with an intelligent approach that results in the soul pouring energy into all the etheric centers via the crown center. The point at the heart of each center becomes so brilliant that it dims the light of all that lies around. And all the centers are then swept into ordered activity by the forces of love and will. As D.K. tells us in Esoteric Psychology, Volume 2, the great polar opposites, as symbolized and expressed by the head center, which is the organ of spiritual energy, and the center at the base of the spine, which is the organ of the material forces, are fused and blended, and from this time on, the man is controlled only from above by the soul. Man is therefore, from the angle of force expression, a mass of conflicting energies and an active center of moving forces with a shift of emphasis constantly going on, and with the aggregation of the numerous streams of energy presenting a confusing kaleidoscope of active interactions, interpenetration, and interdependence until such time as the personality forces, symbolic of divine multiplicity, are subdued or brought into line by the dominant soul. That is what is really meant by use of the word alignment. Isn't that a great quote? Do you feel like a kaleidoscope at times? I do. So, alignment results from control of the personality by the soul. The downpouring of soul energy via the mental and the emotional bodies into the brain, thus producing the subjugation of the lower nature and the awakening of the brain consciousness to its soul awareness. It's the right arrangement, according to ray type, of the energies which are motivating and dynamically arousing the centers into activity. This leads eventually to a direct alignment of the centers upon the spine, so that the soul energy can pass up and down through the centers from the directing center in the head. While this process of soul control is being perfected, and the time consumed is of vast duration, the ray types of the vehicles steadily emerge. The ray of the personality begins to control the life, and finally the soul ray begins to dominate the personality ray and subdue its activity. I hope you like all these little sound bites that I'm adding in here. I think they're all great. All right. All these transference of energies produce turmoil and conflict in the life of the mystic, and they cause difficulties of a psychological nature. For example, through the evolutionary process of the sacral energy, there's a stage of automatic unconscious use by the purely animal man. Then comes a stage of pleasure and physical satisfaction, where the imagination is used to enhance the experience. Next comes a period of conscious subordination of the sex impulse, but that may be no healthier than overindulgence. In both of these stages, sex becomes a dominating conscious thought. We see many people today passing through this stage, just as everyone will at some point. Then will come a stage of transference where the physical pull of sex and the urge to physical creation is not so dominant as the forces begin to be gathered up into solar plexus, where they will be controlled by the astral life more so than the unconscious or conscious sex impulses. With the transference of sexual desire to the solar plexus, the two forces blend their energies and they are gradually carried up to the throat center via the heart center. Here we find a major point of difficulty for the mystic who is rapidly coming into being. He becomes painfully conscious of his duality, of the pull of the world and of the mystical vision of divine possibilities and his personality potencies. Also of love in place of desire, of divine relationship instead of human relationships. But this whole subject is still interpreted in terms of duality. Sex is still imaginatively in his consciousness and is not relegated to a balanced place along the other instincts of the human nature. The result is an almost pathological interest in the symbolism of sex, or something that might be called a spiritualized sex life. These and many more unpleasant examples of sex psychology are to be found, blended with a true and pronounced mystical aspiration and a genuine longing for union with the divine. The cause of all this lies in the stage of transference and can and does cause physical and psychological problems. The seven major centers condition the area of the physical body in which it is found, including the multitude of the lesser energy centers that are found in that same general area, as we saw in the earlier slide. The incoming energy is transmuted within the center into forces, and the transference rate and quality depends on the extent of the enfoldment of the chakra. Awakening centers present a highly electrical nervous system, immediately responsive to energy, resulting in a well-balanced endocrine system. The vitality and the life pouring through the entire body will then be potent and resistant to disease, either innate, hereditary, or of group origin. Today, there is an uneven development, with some centers awakened, others overstimulated, and with the centers below the diaphragm overactive. This produces problems with the nervous system and glands, leading to overstimulation in some cases, subnormal conditions in others, lack of vitality, overactivity, and other undesirable reactions which inevitably produce disease. In short, disease and physical disability, except those due to accidents or planetary epidemics, can be directly traced to the condition of the centers as they affect the nervous system, endocrine system, and the bloodstream. I hope you guys can read this slide. There's a lot packed into them. Health problems related to the crown center relate to the pineal gland, and they can cause inflammation of the brain or tumors. Problems with the ajna relate to the pituitary gland, sinus, nervous system, headaches, and eye trouble. Problems with the throat relate to the thyroid gland, mouth, bronchial tree, shoulders, and a few more areas like that. I will make the slides available. This is in your homework for Great Quest 1 students, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this slide. You will have it available. Health problems related to the heart center relate to the heart, arteries, veins, lungs, breasts, and immune system. Problems with the solar plexus relate to the digestive organs, the stomach, liver, spleen, and other related systems. Problems with the sacral relate to the sex organs, hips, knees, and over-imaginative sexual thoughts. Problems with the base relate to the adrenals, kidneys, bladder. Premature awakening can cause serious nerve and brain problems. I can't overemphasize that. Let it happen naturally. Do not try and rouse the Kundalini. In wrapping up this presentation, I'd like to paraphrase some advice from DK. He says, study the constitution of man. And I'm helping you do that. Study the nature of the rays that provide the forces and energies which make the man who he is. Determine which of the vehicles of contact is the most powerful, the best organized, and the most well-developed. It will indicate how his life expression in this particular lifetime is flowing. Investigate his physical condition with care and focus attention on the centers and corresponding glandular equipment. In many cases, the glands indicate the condition of the centers, thus providing an understanding of the force systems of the patient. It will be essential, DK tells us, that psychologists of the future should arrive at a recognition of an admittance of an inner structure of the human being, of his emotional vehicle, his mental vehicle, and their close interrelation through the medium of the etheric body, the linking web between the dense physical and the other bodies. The soul and its energies who work through the seven chakras, life expressing itself as will or purpose, love, and intelligence, while the mental and astral bodies work through many of the minor centers that are found in the etheric body. The integrations that eventually are carried out through the medium of all the centers, through the heightening of the vibration and subsequent development of the human response apparatus, awaken new qualities of awareness, new sensitivity to that which was hitherto unrecognized, and as a result, new powers begin to open up. Another great quote there. And I have one more. The science of the centers is yet in its infancy, as is the science of the rays and the science of astrology. But much is being learned and developed along these three lines, and when the present barriers are down and true scientific investigation is instituted along these lines, a new era will begin for the human being. These three sciences will constitute the three major departments of the science of psychology in the New Age, plus the contributions of modern psychology and the insight into the nature of man, particularly the physical nature, which it has so wonderfully developed. So, that's what I have for you in my presentation. Does anybody have any questions? Comments? Don't all raise your hands. Okay, did I put everybody to sleep? Well,
BL, perhaps you might ask the students if they have any sense about which chakra might be dominant in them, or maybe a couple of chakras.
Would anybody like to volunteer that information, or should I just unmute you one at a time and call on you?
Yeah, why don't you unmute each student at a time and just ask each to give an opinion? I mean, we've all got well-developed emotional bodies, but we're also working through some of the higher chakras, and so students might have an idea that they'd like to share. At least I'm encouraging you all.
Andrea, would you like to share?
Sure. I just realized from what you said that it is not a stage by stage. It's all encompassing, and it's simultaneous, and it's not 1, 2, 3, but you could go back and forth. So I'd say maybe throat center and heart center. I'm not sure.
That's good, and that's a good combination. I mean, that's how it happens. It is they do overlap. They are penetrating. It's not, one and then the other, and they do slowly open and work together in a concentration. So thank you. Do you feel with the throat center, do you feel that you have creative activities that you're now using? And with the heart center, do you see that related to group activities?
That's a good question. In physical terms, I've always been artistic since I was young. I'm a baker by profession, but what I enjoy the most is the actual decoration. I create these things with my hands. As far as mental creativity, I write. I write a lot. So I think the creativity is going into my writing. Yes.
Good, thank you. Let's see. Karsten, do you have something that you would like to add? Tell us what centers you think you're working with and how you're doing that. I'm not hearing you. I can hear some background noise, but we'll try him again in a minute.
I think he was asleep.
Considering the time it is, his time zone, that could be. Okay, Pamela, I've unmuted you, but you're on self-mute. Would you like to give it a try? Tell us how, what chakras you think you can relate to and the activities.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
I think probably my heart chakra is fairly active and working, maybe tapping into the throat just a little bit recently. I think.
Okay, and as Andrea mentioned in I mentioned back to her, those two do work, I won't say simultaneously, but they're working in concert with each other. The throat center opens up, the heart center becomes active. The heart center, though, is usually a group activity. It's an expansion, an inclusiveness, and that focuses on a group activity. And the creativeness of the throat, it can be in the pursuits like Andrea mentioned, the writing, the painting, anything that's creative, and it can just be creative in a normal way at first, but then it usually expands with the heart center and becomes creativity for the work of the group. So that's the higher level of those. Do you see how they work together?
Yeah, and I guess in the past I was doing quite a bit of group work. I don't know that, I'm in several little groups, but I don't know that I'm really doing a lot of group work. And as far as the throat center goes, I've been having, not really, maybe that it's just becoming active because it's got lots of like I have to clear it a lot and lots of just things to make me notice it a little bit more.
Sure, and that's part of it. That's how when you start bringing those energies up, you have to control them. You have to be able to focus them in the right direction. And if you don't, then the energy gets stultified in there, and that's what causes the problems. The chakra has to be ready to use that energy and to use it in a positive way, and not to let it congestion. Okay, and so that's what we see. We see a lot of throat problems with the people who are transferring it up to the throat. Okay, and we have a comment here from Andrea. She says, I understand now what you mean in regards to group activity. Yes, inclusiveness. Not involved in any physical group work outside of the family interaction, but I can see inclusivity and more expression of impersonal love. Yes, that's true. That's true. When we talk about the groups, we're talking about the fact that the mystic is more prone to stay in his little room and study and try and gather more and more knowledge. And let me rephrase that. The mystic actually gets the spiritual inspiration. Everything is coming down from the higher self or from God, and that he then branches out to the studying, but he's not doing anything with the studying. He's hoarding those nuggets of knowledge. And when the throat center becomes active, you are then spreading those nuggets around. You're writing books, you're teaching people things. And the throat center, the heart center, remember I said that it starts unfolding at that first initiation, unfolds a little bit more at the second, but it doesn't fully unfold until the fourth initiation. That is the more progressive group activity that's happening at those higher initiations. You begin to stop working towards furthering your own spiritual goal, and you start furthering the spiritual goal of the group that you're working with. Basically, that's what it ends up being at the third and the fourth initiation. So,
BL, could I make a comment about the heart chakra and its unfoldment? It's Leonie here, students. It does unfold in disciples around the second initiation, which is when the emotional body is being purified and the energy is starting to divert from solar plexus to heart. But it also can open in what we might call non-spiritual people who are hearts of their group's organizations. And so if you, for example, have a chief executive officer in a business who's the hub and heart of his organization and is running the show, his heart chakra will start to unfold even if he is not what we might call spiritual, but he is the heart of an organization and group. And so that's the sort of the lowest level in consciousness in which some people can start to open their heart center. But the heart center will be working quite largely not only with the ajna and throat, the mental chakras, but there'll also be a sacral component because the lower desire is still strong. Just thought I'd make that comment, Belle.
Thank you. Okay, let's go to Rachel. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, Belle.
How are you doing today?
I'm all right, thank you. I think the heart center has become more important in my life. I have a sense of energies transferring from the solar plexus to the heart center. I had a few problems with my throat center. I think it's not active enough, and I have quite a few problems with the ajna center, with sinuses and nervous system problems. But I think probably my focus is around that solar plexus and heart center.
Okay, thank you. And yes, thank you also. All of you guys, I think, have mentioned the fact that the problems that come with the unfolding of those centers, that's what we have. We're not, none of us are perfect. We're not going to have this transfer be smooth. It's a long and arduous process that goes on as we learn to work with the newer, higher energies and to expand and bring them upward and keep the flow going the way that it needs to go. So, as you see here, we all have health problems that I think we can trace to some of these centers. Okay, Yvonne. Hello.
I think that at this point I'm probably transferred most of my energy from my sacral to my throat chakra, and the creativity that I like to use for an example for that is I do stained glass work, I do gardening, and in particular, for the last couple of years, writing papers for Moria Federation. I think that's the most creative thing I'm doing right now. And I think I am involved in group esoteric work, that my energies are being transferred from the selfish, self-centered interests of the solar plexus chakra to the heart chakra. I'm becoming more group-minded and involved in group. So I think that both those transferences are going on with me right now.
Okay, thank you. And that's pretty much, I think, what pretty much everybody else said too. And that is, it's a process, and it does include both of those things happening at the same time. And some of us may be working a little more on one side than the other, but they will all eventually work out. So, I know personally with myself, I think I'm doing the same thing. I'm working with both of those issues. I was a very private person and hid behind my books and, you know, just absolutely loved to study, but I was doing nothing with it. And then I got creative and I started my writing. I started branching out and helping other people. I started working with the group in a variety of ways. I work with in the Moira Federation, both with the students, and I work with some other faculty members who don't have, they don't use computers very well, and so I try and assist them where I can with that. So I have many of the problems that are associated with the throat center, the branching out, the bronchial upper lung problems, sinus problems. I have a lot of that stuff going on that is combined from both the throat center and the heart center activity. So, does anybody else have anything that they would like to say?
I'd just like to say thank you, Bill, for a great presentation, and I really enjoyed sitting back and listening. Enjoyed it.
Well, I hope everybody enjoyed it. It was a lot of stuff in there, and I want to see a raise of hands. How many of you guys are hooked on that, the Constitution of Man chart that I absolutely love? Thank you.
Thank you. Nice confirmation. And I see Andrea has written something as well. Yeah,
yes. So. Oh, thank you. Right.
Well, good. Leone, may I add a comment?
Sure.
Yes, Astrid.
Can you hear me okay now?
Yes.
Okay. A number of years ago, this is, I guess, as a warning, a number of years ago, when I became interested in esotericism, a friend who believed she needed to teach me and was much further advanced than me advised me that I had to move my energy from my sacral to my throat. Now, I was very, very naive So if this friend told me to do it, I should do it. So I got into meditation one afternoon when it was very quiet. I did what I thought was moving energy from my sacred center to my throat center, and I ended up with severe abdominal pains. Quite critical, actually. I had to stop when I was... took me about 3 days to get over it. So I guess I'm saying this as a warning to anyone who wants to speed the process. I did it through naivety, but I suggest you do not try it because it's painful.
Thank you for that, Astrid, and that is really important as well. And the Tibetan says not to focus on individual chakras, but there are balancing exercises if you work over the whole seven chakras, and as long as there's not intensity really being applied, then it is safe. I've been doing certain exercises like that for a very long time. Having said that, though, the Tibetan, when he starts talking with individual disciples, as he does in the Dhyana books 1 and 2, volumes 1 and 2, he does direct them to work with individual chakras. But, of course, he had higher clairvoyancy, so he could see what was happening. So sometimes in healing we might, and he also generally said for disciples to that if they are having problems in their sacral chakra to consider the raising technique. But one has to be very, very careful, watch very carefully what is happening, and if there is any overstimulation or any problems happening to any health problems arising, to stop very, very quickly and then just re-heal your etheric body by not meditating or doing anything metaphysical, but getting into your physical body and into the sun, and that really helps heal it. So thanks for bringing that up, Astrid. It's just so important.
It is, and it's also a reminder that in that transfer from the sacral to the throat, it's not a direct transfer. The sacral has to go up into the solar plexus, which is that great clearinghouse, and then from the solar plexus to the heart, and then the sacral energy goes up. So it's several steps along the way, and I think that's what you found out. As you were transferring the energy up, it sounds to me like it was being congested there in the solar plexus center, which was not your intent. You intended to bring it up further, but it was stopped at the stomach, and that was the area that was causing the problem. So there's so much to this process, and yes, it's something that you really have to know what you're doing and have to be able to trust the person who's helping you. But there are people out there who do have that etheric vision, and they can see. I think they're pretty few and far between.
Yes. If I could also add, there are teachers, yoga teachers, who teach raising the kundalini energy from the base chakra upwards, and that is so dangerous, perhaps, of everything that we might do, which interferes with the natural evolution of consciousness through the centers. That is the most dangerous, because if by a person's will that is raised before the body has been adequately prepared, it will physically, because it's the fire of matter, will physically burn through tissue. And the Tibetan actually said that in the early 1900s, a lot of people in mental institutions had actually done that, whether they were doing it consciously or unconsciously. That was a cause that put a lot of people, drove a lot of people mad. So just thought I'd mention that as well, BL.
Yes, thank you. That was one of the points I was trying to make earlier, is don't mess with that. And there's too many people out there who are advocating, oh, we can try this. Okay, hold on a second here. Please go ahead, Andrea.
Yes, it's a question in relation to what Leonie said about unconscious and spontaneous. What is the difference? And conscious racing and spontaneous racing.
Who are you addressing the question to, Andrea?
Oh, I'm sorry. To either one of you.
I leave it to you, Bill.
Oh, okay. I was going to say I was going to leave it to you. Okay, so it was the difference between unconscious and spontaneous.
Yes.
Well, I'm not so sure there's that much difference. The unconscious, you're not physically consciously trying to do it. And the spontaneous is a result of all the things being put in the right place in the right order. You've become selfless, you've done your meditation work, you've got contact with the soul, you've raised the energy from the lower chakras to the higher chakras, and you've got the good flow of the energies, and you've set the physical apparatus up enough so that the spontaneous flow can in fact happen. Everything is prepared for it. That's when the spontaneous will happen.
Okay. Well, the reason why I asked this is because I had a spine disease. I had a very spontaneous injury. There's nothing they couldn't trace it to any particular activity. Back about 10 years ago, I had surgery and everything. And so it kind of made me curious about that.
Could I respond to that, Bea?
Please.
Yes. Which area of the body is it? Because we do, if we have congestion in any particular chakra, if they're overbusy, then it can have a damaging effect on the physical body. That because our energy flows in from our psychology through our etheric body and the centers and into the physical body. So if there is congestion anywhere in the etheric body in any particular center, then it will have a disruptive effect on the physical body. So which part of the spine are we talking about?
The lower, it's specifically L5.
Is that it's it, could it be in the region of the solar plexus chakra, Andrea?
Probably between the sacral and the solar
Okay,
plexus.
so we've got those two. It's primarily it I suspect because that's where most problems come from. Most disease arises from an emotional cause. The disease caused by our psychology, most of it arises from our emotional body, from the solar plexus chakra. So I would suspect, and I thought right at the beginning, that that's probably the region on the vertebrae that would be affected. So, and the work that you've been doing, we've been doing to bring yourself in alignment with your mind and with your soul would certainly help that, I would think. It would add to help to decongest that area or energy pouring through that center, and by raising it up as you are doing in your spiritual practices anyway, it will help to bring balance to the body. The best thing we can possibly do for our physical health is to bring harmony into our psychology. And the Tibetans said of the most important quality we could possibly develop to help our health is harmlessness. So I'm going away from you now, Andrea, and being more general. But for those listening, the development and practice of harmlessness, he said, clears our channels and unblocks things and that. So I just thought I would pass that on. But thanks for sharing, Andrea. That's really excellent. Thanks, Bill.
And that,
You're
this
welcome.
being the Taurus and the Wessex festival, that reminds me of the Four Noble Truth and the Eightfold Noble Path that involves all of those, the right thinking and right human relations and right mindfulness and harmlessness is not part of that, but it's the result of doing all of those things in the right manner, so. And those are the meditations in light of the soul that you guys have also been working with. So it's all a natural process of refining every part of our body as we go. So, okay, well, thank you guys. We had good questions and good discussion. And I appreciate you guys all contributing. So,
And I hope to have you all at the next one, Basic Astrology, and it will be, it's structured for beginner students, but also there will be esoteric rules in it, esoteric astrology rules for the advanced astrologers. So I hope you can all attend that next month. Okay, bye from me, everybody. Thanks, Bill.
Thank you, everyone. Good night, good morning, good day, wherever you are. Bye.